Our voice in the wilderness. The phrase voice in the wilderness actually comes from an ancient text in the Jewish Nevi'im, or the scrolls of the prophets. It's Isaiah 40, verse 3. The voice of him that crieth in the wilderness, prepare ye the way of the Lord, and make straight the highways in the desert for our God. Now, the original context for this passage was the prophet Isaiah beseeching the people to make a new community, a new start grounded in the ways of Yahweh, a community grounded on kindness and piety. Well, in somewhat more modern times, there was an American prophet with a similar message. And here's some familiar quotes from him. See if you can guess who it is. Democracy is direct self-government over all the people, for all the people, by all the people. Or this one. I do not pretend to understand the moral universe. The arc is a long one. My eye reaches but little ways. I cannot calculate the curve and complete the figure by the experience of sight. I can divine it by conscience. And from what I see, it bends towards justice. These famous quotes, lifted and then recycled by the likes of President Abraham Lincoln and Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and then President Barack Obama, are actually from our original voice in the wilderness. These quotes belong to the prophetic voice of Theodore Parker. And Reverend Parker was a prominent, yet very controversial Unitarian minister in the decades leading up to the Civil War. Now, I'm sure Reverend Karen has referred to Reverend Parker many times, but if you're new or don't remember, I'll give you a little hint on who he was. The first thing that impresses me is this man was very, very intelligent. He was kind of one of those wunderkinds. He started teaching school at the age of 17. He had a working commanding grasp of 20 languages, because for fun, he decided to challenge himself if he could learn a language a month at one point. He got accepted into Harvard College, but his family couldn't afford the tuition, so they made a deal. If he showed up just on exam days to take the exams, that would be okay. So he proceeded to get through Harvard College in 1 year instead of the normal three. And then he got a degree in Harvard Divinity School after that and became a Unitarian minister. So he was married and had a parish of his own in Roxbury, Massachusetts, by the age of 25. Now, it wasn't all rosy for him and his family, because by 27, he had lost his mother and over half of his siblings. By birth, he had eight siblings. Five of them were dead by the time he was 27 from tuberculosis. But what he was most famous for came after that period, when he was into his 30s. He became a prominent member of the Transcendentalists, and they were a small group of Unitarians who believed that the world was divine and that the humans that lived in it were divine as well. They were part of that divinity. They also rejected all things supernatural and believed that Jesus was a man, but was the best manifestation of God here on earth. Now, since Parker was a very gifted preacher, people were paying attention to him all over the place, and soon his Christian credentials were questioned, and he was shunned by all the other Unitarian ministers who at that time were still exclusively Christian. But with the help of some strong and really wealthy supporters, he set out on his own and started his own congregation. And by 1845, at the age of 35, his brand of transcendental Unitarianism was drawing a membership of over 2,000. Now, at the time, that was 3% of the population of Boston. And they had to rent out a music hall for his services because they needed a huge space. And you can see the picture of that. That is the front cover on your order of service today. That's Reverend Theodore Parker preaching in the Boston Music Hall. So obviously, Parker had become a very influential preacher, and he viewed himself as a prophetic religious reformer, a prophetic religious reformer. He and his transcendentalist friends not only railed against the established and, in their eyes, way too conservative Unitarian church, but they were embedded in the groundswell of all the social movements that were taking place at the time. They were rapidly surfacing in this newly industrializing nation. Now, if you think about it, the transcendentalist belief in the divinity of everyone is really a precursor to our first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of everyone. And so therefore, in their eyes, if any population was marginalized, that was a part of the social movement at the time. So some of them were the condition of women and the accompanying temperance movement. Prison reform and the physical destitution of the poor were some that they were really focused on. But Parker is best known as a radical abolitionist. Although he did, I will admit, he did believe in the racial superiority of Europeans, because at the time that was kind of perceived as a scientific fact, he did not believe that Africans or anyone deserved to be slaves, and he spoke out vehemently against it. In fact, he particularly thought the fugitive slave law was an abomination. The fugitive slave law was a law passed by Congress that if slaves escaped the South, where slavery was free, and got to the North, they were mandated by law to send them back to the South. He was an active part of the resistance movement against it. He helped house escaped slaves in his home that they were on their way to Canada as part of the Underground Railroad. And I've heard it said, this might be an urban myth, but I've heard it said that if you went into his study sometimes when he had slaves living there, that he'd be writing his sermons with a loaded pistol up on his desk. He may have been shunned by the Unitarian establishment, but he was very, very influential. During this period, it's said that only two slaves were ever returned from Boston back to the South, and those met mass protests at the time. Parker was the voice in the wilderness crying out against the injustice of slavery. And frankly, it could be said that Theodore Parker was the godfather of Unitarian social justice. Like Isaiah, Parker believed that his people could be better. America could be a shining example of participatory democracy that contrasted sharply with the feudal aristocracy that he abhorred in Europe at the time. And he believed destiny was on his side. The arc of the moral universe ultimately bends towards justice. Well, now there's another new prophetic voice calling us. And I'd like to share with you some excerpts from a letter from Reverend Peter Morales to the Unitarian Universalist ministers. It was published in December of 2016. Dear colleagues, these are tough times. We are living in the midst of historic cultural turmoil. Long festering resentments are being unleashed, posing immediate threats to the most marginalized in our society and presenting long-term danger to our natural environment. I believe we're entering into dangerous times. I expect that the new administration will unleash human rights abuses aimed at migrants and Muslims shortly after it takes office. In the longer term, other marginalized groups, women, the poor, people of color, transgender people, etc., will be in danger. We're already seeing an increase in violent acts by people who see the election as a validation of their hate. We must prepare to provide sanctuary and resist. First, we must provide sanctuary in the broadest and richest sense of the term. We begin with offering safe places for reflection and healing for our congregants and for those seeking a spiritual community. But these times demand more. We must provide sanctuary to those most vulnerable, and particularly migrants, primarily from Mexico and Central America, may well face mass deportation. In addition, Muslims have been targeted. Second, we must prepare to resist human rights violations in active ways. We must make it harder to deport, register, discriminate, and despoil. And for those of you, if you're members, you get the UU World Magazine. It came yesterday. I noticed that quote is on the front cover. In the past, most of our work for justice and compassion has been positive. We've been advocates for marriage equality, racial justice, civil rights, immigration reform, and environmental justice. To use a sports metaphor, we have played offense. We joined with others to advance an agenda. Today, we must prepare to play defense. We will have to respond quickly to acts of government. We will have to react rather than act. We will need to be agile and fast. In the coming weeks, you'll hear more as we work together to support you. For now, I want you to know that you are not alone. Together we are strong. Together we inspire one another. And together we can do this. We need one another. Thank you again for all you do. Faithfully, Peter Morales, President of the Unitarian Universalist Association. Well, I think Reverend Morales is describing our new wilderness. We're living in a time of wilderness. Nothing, frankly, makes sense right now. This is uncharted territory for most of us. Unitarian Universalists, I think we believed we were helping to build a more loving, just, and inclusive world. And I think we thought that even though there were going to be bumps along the way, we were solidly on that road. We thought this was the road America was on. But as it's been so often said lately, we were living in a bubble. The bubble has burst, and I feel like the wilderness is just surrounding us now. We ask ourselves, has America decided to get off the road and go four-wheeling across the desert? Are we retreating back to the inequities and a narrow definition of America that Parker faced in the 19th century? Has Parker's arc of the moral universe taking a radical seismic shift somehow? No, I think Parker was right. America can still be a bright people's democracy, the one that Parker envisioned. I still believe the arc of the moral universe ultimately does bend towards justice. I think we've just hit an obstruction in the road, and this time, instead of a speed bump or a pothole, it's a sinkhole. And as we know from California lately, sinkholes can be fixed if we all just join together and try to fill it back in and pave the way for social progress again. We have a choice, though. We have a choice. We can hide in the wilderness. We can let fear consume us. We can retreat back into our liberal bubble and then lovingly care for each other. And I don't mean to mock that. That's a given. We will care for each other. This place will stay open. We will be here to provide sanctuary and reflection and healing for congregants that are out there helping the world. But Reverend Morales's call to action is much more. He says we must prepare to play defense. We must prepare to resist. In other words, I think we need to reclaim our proud social justice heritage that Parker began and modify it to meet the current times. Someone needs to make it clear that the emperor has no clothes. We're being called to speak up, to get involved in ways that we haven't for a very long time. So, I think we have our call from the wilderness. Now, how do we figure out how to answer this call? And personally, I've been struggling with this ever since the election. How do I personally answer this call to resist? How do I, as a minister serving a congregation in Stevens Point, answer this call to resist? As I was mulling this over with a colleague, he pointed me to a framework that I found really useful, and I'd like to share it with you today. So you've probably discovered it already. It's in your order of service, and I invite you to take it out now while I kind of move through it. So it should look like this. I hope everyone has one. It didn't fall out of your order of service. So as you see, this is a framework. It has four approaches. And there's one in each box of the grid, and they represent approaches to the relationship between a church or a faith community and society. And it comes from a book called The Varieties of Religious Experience, and it has three authors. They were basically researchers. They did extensive research in Hartford, Connecticut to write this. Now, it's a little dated. It's from 1984, but I don't think the world's changed that much since then, and I think it was still useful. So I'm going to walk through them real briefly so you have a sense of what they are. So starting in the upper left-hand corner, there's the civic. So that means that you're a congregation of like-minded people that you feel a real responsibility to be part of the world outside these walls, that you probably are participating in government or charity activities or all kinds of things, but you're doing it as an individual, and then you come here to kind of get your batteries recharged to go back out in the world, which closely ties to the one below that, that's sanctuary. I used that term this morning in our call to gather, and that was deliberate, because I believe all of our Unitarian Universalist congregations, in fact, every faith organization, that's our primary goal, to come. You should come in here each week and be able to be spiritually renewed and energized. And whether you go back out in the world and face the wilderness, or if that just helps you get through the day, that's good. When I grew up in a very conservative Lutheran church, my father told me that was the only purpose of the church. So it should have nothing to do with the outside world. It's just about that. So on the right-hand side, you have two other columns. The left-hand side was far more individually focused. The right-hand side is collective. So the top, I love what it says on the top. Our mission is to change existing social structures in order to guarantee justice and equal rights for all people. The congregation sees itself as a collective participant in community life, and the minister is expected to be a public figure. And I was talking to Reverend Karen as I was getting ready for this sermon, and you are probably the congregation that I know of more than any that I've worked with that is in that space. And I don't mean to say that these are mutually exclusive by any stretch. Many congregations are all of them, but you're the one that I think, from what I can see, I'm good friends with Karen. And so on Facebook, you're always out there. Well, you got the Capitol right down the street, so that's kind of convenient, right? And then Evangelicals at the bottom, and as you use, we tend to shriek back at the word evangelical. But if you look at the bottom in italicized, it says, our mission is to ensure that all have heard the message. Now, this is a little dated, of reason and tolerance and religion. I would just leave it as of reason and tolerance. And so I think this is one of those where I think of it as a PR thing, that you are the congregation, and I think many UU congregations are known for this, for being radically inclusive, for being radically welcoming. And I had a friend of mine come up to me, and she was describing someone who was really having trouble, and she said to her, you need to go to the Unitarian Universalist Church, because you know they're going to really accept you and be really welcoming. So that's the kind of thing. You might not be out in the streets as a congregation with your name on a banner, but you are well known for something, and that message means something in the community. So those are the four types that came out of this study. And I think Reverend Morales's urging, I think on the left-hand side, that would describe most Unitarian Universalist congregations. We are clearly a sanctuary where we can recharge our batteries. And from what I've found, it's kind of a cliche. If you look around who's involved in the community, it's a who's who of who's in the Unitarian Universalist congregation. That's just part of our makeup. But I think he's saying, okay, that's good. That's wonderful. And if that's the best you can do, fine, do more of it. But I think he's saying, let's get over and see how we could become something more on this right-hand side, because the world has changed and we need to change with the world. So I think in conclusion, I'd like to say it's been 150 years since Reverend Parker took a stand and made his voice heard. And we lift up the same ideals of democracy and the moral arc of the universe. But given the wilderness coming at us quickly and surrounding us, I think sometimes right now it's easy to question whether we really believe in Parker's vision. I'm here to say we do. We do emphatically. Now is not the time for wandering in the wilderness. Reverend Morales believes the world is calling out for our voice in the wilderness, and we're uniquely positioned to deliver that voice. To deliver that, we need to go out and point out that the emperor has no clothes, that something has gone terribly wrong, that people are going to be hurt. Indeed, that good people are already being hurt just because of the climate of fear and intimidation that has occurred. We need to go out and point out that we can be so much more, more loving, more inclusive, more just. We are being called to carefully consider how we will be our best voice in the wilderness, both as individuals and as a community of faith. As the prophet Isaiah proclaimed thousands of years ago, there's a voice in the wilderness calling back us back to Yahweh, calling us back to be our best selves. We are that voice. Blessed be.